Get ready for takeoff. This is a first class podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. The flight starts now. Welcome to this week's edition of the first class podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Tim Bigelow here along with Warren Smith. And I just said, hey, let's just get to recording because Warren is fired up. He is like on fire today. On a number of things.
Yeah, I'm jacked up, man. Listen to 1290 in the morning last few mornings leading up to
that'll make
trade deadline. Listen to Westwood fucking blow smoke up people's ass. Yeah,
that'll get you fired up. I've been trying to avoid 1290 actually lately. And part of the motivation behind doing this podcast was to have something else out there beside what I got to listen on the morning with 1290.
Yeah, I can't help myself. I'm a junkie, man. I wake up and the first thing I do is throw on the Jets talk because I just want to think about all the crazy things that could happen over the next few weeks. Very excited. It's an exciting time to be a Jets fan.
So we are going to touch on the three games that the Jets played since our last podcast in the homestand. So games 2 through 4 on the homestand. That goes with the game with Vegas. And then, of course, the Jets finished last night playing against the Arizona Coyotes. I went practicing saying Arizona and played Colorado in between. We are going to talk about Injury Bay and all the injuries that the Jets have been facing and how they've been facing the adversity of that. And then talk about specific players that have stepped up their play in lieu of all the injuries. The Jets did last night, of course, welcome back Nick Petan and Brendan Lemieux, who had played a few games earlier in the year. They got the call-ups with all the injuries. We'll also be talking about the play of Ben Chiarot, who's becoming a regular now that Trouba's out, and, of course, the play of Dustin Byfuglien. We're also going to be talking about Connor Hellebuyck, who continues to break records and team records, and it's going to set some new standards for the franchise by the end of the year for sure. We'll talk about Patrick Laine's Tribune article. We're going to talk about goalie interference. I'll also talk about the trade deadline. And we'll also talk about the PK. And I think Warren wants to talk about what the best top line is for the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, with all the injuries and everything, we've got to see all sorts of combinations on the lines. And it continues to grow. Actually, we should mention also as well, we'll talk about Kyle Connor's demotion and how he's kind of raised the elevation of his game as well since being demoted down. And how that's gone. So there's a ton of stuff to talk about, the games to go through in quick order. We're not going to spend a lot of time on the games. We'd like to freewheel it around here. No, why don't we just start with line combinations, and if that's where you want to go with that on who, and that's a great question. Who is the Jets' top line? If we had everybody healthy, who's the Jets' top line?
Well, I'm looking at Brian Munns on Twitter right now. It looks like during practice today, they had Laine, Scheifele, Wheeler, Pearl, Little, Ehlers, Connor Kopp-Armia, and then Dano, Petan, Rozovic with Lemieux out from last game. And then it looks like Morrissey Myers, Poolman with Byfuglien, and Chiarot, Kulikov. So Enstrom wasn't skating today. Doesn't mean he's not going to be in the lineup. That's not a given. But when I look at these lines, I didn't know how they were going to set it up. It was open for discussion. It was up in the air. Things that Marie said, it said like we thought that maybe Wheels wouldn't be moved right away from center, but it looks like he's back on his line with his bro. Scheifele, I'm not convinced, and call me crazy, but I mean, when you watch the game, I just don't, right now, I love Laine there. I've talked about it in past podcasts. I think that it's always a good thing playing with Blake Wheeler. There's a lot to learn there, but in a short time, I mean, we're talking 3 goals in 5 games. The way Rozovic attacks the puck, his speed, I just really was hoping that that he would be on the line with Scheifele and Wheeler personally. I feel like that, to me, on a 5-on-5 line with that speed, combination of speed, tenacity on the puck, on the forecheck, and just their two-way game overall, I think that would be an unbelievable line. I love Laine. It sounds crazy to say that, but I think at this point in his career, he's a bit of a power play specialist. He's still figuring out his 5-on-5 game, and I actually think Rozovic overall, his overall game is a little bit better.
Oh, it's an interesting dynamic on bringing Mark Scheifele back in and putting him in that spot. Deservedly, he was, you know, top of the team along with Blake Wheeler in points, really close when he went down to injury. And there's no reason not to expect that he would be back up there. And I think they do want to get Wheeler back to the wing. And of course, Patrick Laine's numbers are better playing with Blake Wheeler, although you could argue that everybody's numbers when they're playing with Blake Wheeler are better. Yeah, exactly. I will say that there was an interesting stat that, and remember, actually, you brought it up in the last podcast and you didn't know, but, and I don't have the 5-on-5 ones, but of the 13 power play goals that Patrick Laine has scored this year, the primary assist for 8 of those is Blake Wheeler, just to give you an idea on that. I also think when he got up with Blake Wheeler, he actually caught up on his 5-on-5 goals to be more even with his power play goals once he started playing with Wheeler.
Yeah, that's because Blake Wheeler is so good at driving the play. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm happy with Laine playing there, don't get me wrong. And I don't know exactly how you set it up. I think it's a little bit, this could be a temporary thing. Things could definitely be juggling the next couple of days once Adam Lowry comes back. He's a really important piece to the puzzle. And I felt like last game in Phoenix, it was definitely a trap game to some extent. There's a multitude of things that happened that made the game go the way it did, including Helly having an off night finally. And it's great when you can kind of lay an egg and still get a win. But I felt like last night, missing Adam Lowry's thump in the lineup was noticeable. So there's going to be a trickle-down effect when Adam Lowry comes back to the lineup. And I think you could throw these names in a hat and come up with 4 great lines.
Yeah. And you could. You could literally throw names in a hat.
But it is worth noting. I mean, there has been a Nick Batan fan club. I wouldn't say you're a part of that. I mean, you're not those goofballs that are on Twitter, although you love Nick Batan. There's kind of a crazy contingent that follow him or that are obsessed with him on Twitter and shit. But now he's got a guy to play with. And he didn't look too bad. Him and Dano had some chemistry in the last game. We'll discuss a little bit later. But, I mean, Patan and Dano had good chemistry. And Rozovic, to me, is like a Wheeler already. You can see him. It's like if you put him with anybody, he's going to create some scoring chances. So it'll be an interesting dynamic. They have a history of playing together on the top line, on the best line in the AHL. So that'll be cool to see. And it'll be nice for Patan again to be playing with some offensive players. It's not like, you know, a year or two ago when you stuck playing with fucking Chris Thorburn on the fourth line and guys like that, right?
Yeah, you know what? We will talk about Nick Patan a little more later on. As far as the sick bay understanding of this, as I said to Warren off air, Patan's timeline is really relatable to Matt Hendricks' timeline, being able to be back in the lineup. That's where he's going to slot in. And if Lowry comes back first, that really doesn't affect Nick Patan in my thinking on this, because
Lowry comes back, Kopp's going to roll back to the wing. I think they like Kopp's game better at the wing.
Yeah.
And so you imagine when Lowry comes in, he gets back to the middle.
Then Connor would shift down and...
Yeah, Dano pops out, Kopp goes over to the wing, you got Kopp, Lowry, or Mia in the third line role.
Checking line.
Tanev is still out
in
the checking line capacity. Yeah. And then, you have Connor with, you know...
Rozovic and Patan playing on the fourth line.
Which would be just...
Like, it's insane, crazy. Right? And that really was at a certain point, the very early beat. Well, no, because they didn't get to, because Patan was up beginning of the year, and then Connor came up. So, yeah, Rozel, Connor, and Patan never actually at the A got to play together either this year, but they have played together in the past. So you'll have that option. The other option on that is that Rozel and Connor have had the ability to play top six. So if the second line does kind of have some drop-off, and they're not finishing lately, but they did definitely are creating offense. They're just not finishing lately. So you have the ability to swap Matty Perreault and bring up Connor or Rozovic to play with Ehlers and Little. You can swap it out. I can't see Nick Ehlers going down to the fourth line, and I can't see Brian Little going down to the fourth line. But you do have Matty Perreault that you can swap with Connor or Rozel if they're rolling.
Well, they touched on it a bit on TSN. I thought it was a good point. They said Brian Little, the last few games, because of the injury to Lowry – and because of the injury to Shifley, his minutes have gone through the roof. He's doing some PK action. So it all affects it. Yeah, we saw it again in the Phoenix game. When you lose your PK guys, those are the guys that go in the trenches for you. Those are the guys that block shots and do all the little things that people don't give them credit for. That's why we joke on the podcast,
entirely
calling the no love line, because it's true. But it's what those guys do that allow the other guys to be great. It allows them to stay fresh. And unfortunately, because of this plague that has taken over the Winnipeg Jets, everybody going down, seven guys down last game, you know, it's going to affect your scoring punch on your second line. Jets are incredibly fortunate. The idea of having, you know, that skill set on a fourth line, and we talked about it all year prior when we were talking about having Armia and fucking Perreault on the fourth line and their offensive skill set. Well, the same thing's going to be for the young kids. Now those guys, they're going to put them out. Maurice is a smart coach, despite what tons of people would like to say. He's a brilliant coach. And what he's going to do is he's going to set them up for success. He's going to put them out in situations where they can use what they're best at, which is offensive skill. I imagine setting them up with offensive zone draws when he can, and maximizing their minutes against the other team's third and fourth lines. They're not going to be playing against the other team's first and second. So, yeah, you're going to get that secondary scoring from your quote-unquote fourth line.
We'll talk a bit about it in the Arizona game, but the checking line actually in the last game against Arizona, because Kyle Connor got moved up in there, became more of an offensively threat of a line, because Kyle Connor actually we'll just call this a fact, have more offense than Brandon Tanev does. Now, I'm not slagging on Brandon Tanev, and I'm not saying that I think Kyle Connor should be there all the time, but that creates a different look on that third line, because they will generate more offense with Kyle Connor playing with Joel Armia between Cobb than they would otherwise with Tanev in that same spot. The downside of that, which we were just talking about, is the trickle-down effect on the penalty kill. Playing Arizona last night, Brandon Tanev, Matt Hendricks, Adam Lowry, and on the defensive end, Jacob Trouba are four staples to the Winnipeg Jets penalty kill that has gone leaps and bounds this year. And you take out all four of those guys, that's like taking out an entire set of your penalty killers that now have to be replaced. So yeah, Ben Chiarot has got more minutes, because the Jets took, I believe it was, well, they took about three penalties last night. So when we talk about Chiarot's minutes in the Arizona game, that's been in effect some time that he got on the ice time. His ice time minutes last night were up. But in addition to that, yeah, Brian Little has to play more minutes. Wheeler has to play more minutes. Kopp and Armia all had to play more minutes just to combat that. And I think even Mark O'Daniel had some penalty kill time, even a bit.
There's two words that come to mind when we're discussing all this. One being trust. Okay, Paul Maurice has trust in the players that have been there and done that before. So that's why you see Little, that's why you see Wheels out on the PK, because he has more trust than the young kids that he brought up. Definitely doesn't have the same trust as he had in the guys that went down, that had the experience, like Hendy, like Tanev. Chemistry is the other word. People always associate chemistry with offense, but chemistry is also a defensive thing. Guys that play together, they know each other's tendency, when they're going to press, when they aren't. And with Tanev's speed and his finish on finishing his checks, other teams have to be aware of that. Hendy, doesn't matter what position his body is in, he throws it in front of the puck. And so I just noticed, you know, with these guys being out of the lineup, the PK does look different. They're capable. They've done well enough, you know, but it's not the same dynamic. And yeah, like you said, it changes the dynamic of the third line. We don't have a true checking line now to go up. Lowry is a beast down low in the defensive end. He just goes in and finishes guys and takes the puck away and strolls out of the zone like it's no big deal. And he's a hard guy to take off the puck. And their cycle game of wearing guys down, we're not seeing that quite as much. That pound them down low over and over and get the offensive zone change. And then you get those top two lines. You're just discussing with Brian Little's line, struggling a bit offensively. Well, those guys are recipients of that third line checking line, pounding the opposition and then having them stuck in their own end and getting that offensive zone switch. And having fresh legs with high skill, it's all connected, man.
And I think with the combinations that Maurice went with, and Arizona was a good example, he positionally went with the best lineup that he could ice with the injuries. And like I said, when you're looking at guys who are out and guys who are coming back in, it is very clear to me that what Paul Maurice is going to do, like I said, the whole Nick Batan thing is that's relatable to Matt Hendricks. When Lowry comes back, yeah, Kopp goes back to the wing and somebody moves down to the fourth line. That probably makes Marco Daniel the healthy scratch, meaning Kyle Connor or Armia go down from third to fourth line now. But that's all the understanding on that. And we get a bit of a move because Brendan Lemieux, of course, has, you know, is out of the lineup once Mark Scheifele comes back. It's positional. It's not to say Brendan Lemieux doesn't bring more than Nick Batan or vice versa, but positionally.
Well, I'm telling you right now, man, you just have to look, and I'm a big Brendan Lemieux fan, and I understand his mindset last night before taking that penalty he took. He was kind of running around just looking for somebody to take their head off. One, to make an impact, to show why, you know, what he can do in the NHL once again, just to remind the team. And to stick up for the boys. A couple guys took some shots last night. I fucking hate Ronaldo. He's one of the dirtiest pricks in the NHL, and he plays for Phoenix. I'm fucking Arizona. I knew I was going to do that. You said that earlier, and I still knew I was going to say Phoenix. Whatever. The Coyotes.
Yeah, I say it all the time, too.
Yeah, I always do. I screw it up every time. But Ronaldo's a dirty prick. Max Domi, he's a bit of a prick, too.
The Quebec Coyotes, I'm going to start calling them.
The QC Coyotes.
But they still call it. No, they go back and call themselves the Nordiques as soon as they move back.
As soon as they do. if we had any Quebec listeners, they're going to be like, yeah, we love First Class Podcast. They're convinced we're getting the Nordiques back. I hope so, but I feel like Bettman hates them. I felt like that for a long time about Winnipeg. So, you know, who knows? But
when you look at the history of it, though, the not that we plan on talking about this, the new expansion markets that they go into pay top dollar. When Winnipeg, who they can't really do expansion with, and Winnipeg didn't have that kind of funding, then they take a franchise that is struggling and let those guys buy that out at a lesser value and do the relocation. So
yeah, Quebec will be a relocation franchise way before it'll ever be an expansion.
Well, no, because it'll be balanced out once they get the extra team in there, and they have that in Seattle. And then the two markets that are trying, Houston and Quebec City, are basically going to have to figure out a way to get relocation teams in order to have them. And to be quite honest with you, the common sense on it is that Arizona franchise will not get turned around until it's not in Arizona. Like, to be quite honest with you, they have done zip on a level of management. And
they certainly have been getting bailed out left and right, though.
Yeah.
Bettman doesn't want to let that one go. It's like he doesn't want to admit he made a mistake by putting them in the desert where you have to explain the rules of hockey and hand out a fucking...
And now he's got the poster boy for why it was a success in
the in Matthews. In Austin Matthews. The effect that had on him, sure.
Still doesn't mean anybody else is going to the games there. And that franchise, like, what I was thinking about even watching the game last night is that at one point they talk about the guy, Panic, that Chicago just made the deal with for Anthony Duclair, because Anthony Duclair, who's one of the younger, more skilled players that Arizona had, who basically said, I want out. That's the reason why he ends up in Chicago this year. So I'm like, what does that tell you when you're elite players? And I'll tell you right now, if Ekman Larson... And they had a deal on the table for him to be able to go to a team and a franchise that actually had a chance. Look at Mike Smith this year. Goes to Calgary. Is Mike Smith a bad goaltender? No, he's just been stuck in Phoenix for how long?
Yeah, and see to me, if Ekman Larson asked to go or Mike Smith asked to go, well, I haven't heard that either one, even when Mike Smith left. I don't recall ever hearing that he
was mentioning complaining about going. But Anthony Duclair did.
That's sort of the young generation, the kind of a whiny generation, these early 20-year-olds nowadays, right? I'm a 33-year-old man, whiny 20-year-olds, but it's true. So he wants to win now, I get it. But Mike Smith paid his dues, man. He played with a franchise that sucked for a long time, and so has Ekman Larson. So if they were to say, hey, I want out. I want to go to a franchise. I want to have a chance to win. Declare. It's kind of like suck it up, man. You just came into the league. I don't know. If that, I never heard that.
Kane Jr. Is that what you want to?
What's that?
Nickname him Kane Jr. Evander
Kane Jr.
Evander Kane Jr. Sure. I'm just wondering.
Not on that level.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like
Kane's a higher level of douche. It's hard to reach his level.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, that's a baby step towards.
I swear to God,
that's a baby step towards.
I haven't seen it yet, and I haven't been on Twitter much outside of going to the Jets to listen to different interviews and things like that. But if I hear anybody or see anybody say that they should make a trade for Evander Kane, can you imagine? I don't think anybody would. But
nobody,
it'd be hilarious.
Nobody would. You would not bring that back into the lineup. Well, you know, we'll go into the Vegas game here. We're going to talk about some whether or not the Jets should even make a deal at the trade deadline. We'll talk about that in a bit. But let's talk about Vegas. Here's the numbers with Scheifele gone going into the Las Vegas game. Jets 9-2-2 since the Scheifele injury, averaging over 3 goals for a game, averaging 2.15 goals against. The power play was at 29.3%, the PK 90%. The save percentage was 934. That's all the goalies combined. So that includes Comrie would have played in that stint. I think Mason actually did play a game before Scheifele went down even in that stint. But those are the numbers. And that's all since the Scheifele injury. Should mention he is practicing now in a contact jersey as of yesterday.
From what it sounds like, it's not 100% locked down yet. But it looks like they fully expect him to be back on Friday. Unless anything happens, cross fingers, the next few days that the doctors don't pull the plug on that and say, we need you to rest a couple more days. But it looks like he should be back.
This is
a matchup.
This is the 10-game homestand, game number 2 for the Jets. Fifth team in the National Hockey League since 1975 to have a 10 or more home game stand in a season. 18-3-1 at home. And they had the best win percentage in the NHL at home. So they have a 7-game win streak, which tied the franchise record. They, of course, did not beat Vegas, controversially. So they tied the franchise record. They might be able to tally this off in this homestand yet, but that will be seen. There's still enough games for them to get back up and over a 7-game win streak at home in a row. Power play at home was 31.6%, number one. And then the Jets had won 14 of the last 15 at home with a plus 33 goal differential. Those are just the stats. The PK was actually doing really good, too. It's 85%, almost 86% at home, and 82.6% overall. Really great numbers on that. 39 for 40 in the last 13 that they played going into that Vegas game. This is just stats. This is why this team's been doing so good. And those
are
important numbers.
If you say no other stat, and you said 39 for 40, you know you're an above 500 team, because that's an absolutely incredible stretch for the Jets' PK, which was a part of their team that people considered a weakness for a long time. So that's a big improvement over last year.
Third meeting between Vegas and Winnipeg. Of course, the 5-2 loss in November in Vegas. As we said, you know, what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas, really did. And then they won 6-4 at home in December. Vegas had a 4-2 win over Calgary on Tuesday night before coming in and playing the Jets. 14-9-2 on the road. They're also way better at home than on the road. And are sitting first in the Western Conference. They were on record for getting the most, I believe, most wins for a expansion team in a season if they won this game. That was the big thing going into the game. They were 33-12-4, 6-2-2 in their last 10.
And the Jets had a chance, a streak of their own, to have the longest winning streak at home. I believe it was eight games in a row.
Yeah, they did. Marc-Andre Fleury was back in net for Vegas. He's 13-4-2, did go to the All-Star game. 1.78 goals against average, 942 save percentage, 2 shutouts. He missed 25 games due to injury this season, but Vegas didn't miss a beat even with 5 goalies, including a call-up for a game from the Western Hockey League. They had a guy play a game against the Oilers, and they won. Ended up getting a call-up.
Well, everybody beats the Oilers this year.
Helly was in net for the Jets, 26-6-7, 235, 924, 4 shutouts. At that point, Winnipeg got up with a 1-0 lead in the first period. There's a high-end scoring chance, about 14-17. Line A shoots just wide, and shout-out to Dennis Bayek. It caroms to Roslo, but he can't get a stick on it. So really good chance there. It's the first time I've gone out of my... I didn't go out of my way, but that was a carom. I'm going to actually call it a carom and use the term on it. The Jets goal came 4:50 in the first. Kyle Connor got the puck in deep, and Fleury went to play it, and Hendricks hustles and got in front of it and actually put it in front of the net where Joel Armia has an open net to get his 10th of the year. So fourth, this at during this game would have been the fourth line, Joel Armia 10th from Hendricks and Connor. Yeah. Kyle Connor getting the assist on that, and again his hustle and Hendricks hustle gets that going.
That's why when people consider a demotion to go to the fourth line, not really. Sometimes it's just a kick in the ass you need. And it's worth noting, like, Kyle Connor has done the exact same thing for us that Matty Pro did when once going down on that fourth line, having similar chemistry with Joel Armia too. Kyle Connor's played a more aggressive game, and he's contributing on the score sheet. So it's huge, man.
So great goal for them. Second period, and really, like I said, we're going to stream through these pretty quickly. There was some switches even in the lineup on this, I guess because Hendy went down. But we'll talk about that right now as we go into the game. Second period, Vegas gets their first goal of the game, 7:50. That was shorthanded. Dustin Byfuglien was trying to carry it in over at the Vegas blue line, and he was stopped at the line. Blake Wheeler, who was basically covering for Byfuglien at that point, went back to play it, and he got knocked off the puck at the blue line by Riley Smith. And then Riley Smith had a breakaway and went roof down to glove side on Connor Hellebuyck. But again, the zone entry on the power play that didn't happen because of Dustin Byfuglien is the reason why Blake Wheeler gets knocked over at the Jets blue line trying to retrieve that. So not that.
It's the play before the play.
Yeah, it is the play before the play. And good on Riley Smith for knocking over Wheeler and catching him, you know, a little, you know, not centered on getting back there. But the play before, if you were PVRing that, you would see that Dustin Byfuglien not getting the puck in deep on the power play. And that turnover is the reason why that goal goes in the net. And I'm not trying to hate on Dustin Byfuglien. I'm just like, that's the reason for it. Vegas gets another goal on special teams on the power play. A point shot gets through the pads of Helly, and Neil, the guy you want to trade for, apparently not a fan of our goaltender, basically takes a nice swing, breaks his stick over Connor Hellebuyck's mats, and then Eric Hula is able to find the puck loose in the crease and is able to tuck it into the open net.
How the fuck was that not disallowed?
I don't know. I have what the fuck written.
Right. Slight pause for the breakdown of the game here. How can you slash a goalie in the face? Some fucking goofballs are trying to blame Buff. Oh, he slightly hooked his stick. He was trying to swat at the puck to knock the puck in the net. He missed, slashed him in the fucking... It doesn't matter if it's accident or if it's an accident or on purpose. You hit the goalie in the mask, that's not going to have an effect on whether he can track a puck, let alone find the puck that's behind him.
Even if Byfuglien puts Neil's stick in to Connor Hellebuyck, he's still supposed to have control of his stick. Remember, actually, and I think it was a game against Colorado in Colorado, their first game of the year, and Wheeler got a penalty because the defender lifted his stick.
It happens all the time. I know exactly what you're talking about. It happens all the time.
And Wheeler got called for a penalty.
It's your responsibility to be strong on your stick and not allow that to happen. Matty Perreault, and he pointed this out, he got an interference not too long ago. How many games back are we talking? A game? Two games? Like, it's very recent. Game. Right.
Yep.
He got, not only was the goal disallowed, he goes to the box for a fucking penalty. I'm not even asking for that on the play, although I think it easily could have been a penalty. I'm saying there's just no way you can call that a goal. I don't care if the puck's behind.
And it goes to review, so they've got the chance to basically disallow the goal for goalie interference, whether or not they call a penalty or not. it's clear you can tell they miss a call. At the All-Star break, and we talked a bit about this, that they were going to become a little more, and the league actually sent out a memo that they were going to be a little, what's the word for it?
More lenient?
Lenient on goaltender interference. Of course, at this point, this is the wrong call. It's just the wrong. It's the wrong call.
And it's the turning point, in some ways, of the game. You got to, that you can't fuck that up. You just can't make that decision, and it hurt the Jets on this night.
So Vegas goes up 2-1 after two. And I won't swear, I'm just going to let Kevin Sawyer know that his love for Dustin Byfuglien has got to the point of being non-objective. Just going to put that out there. I hope, Kevin, if you're listening, you need to tone it down and be more objective with your Dustin Byfuglien. Because after the 2-1 goal, you were commenting on Dustin Byfuglien having a yet another great game when he was on the ice for both Vegas goals. Just saying.
That being said, and I do agree, I'm confused sometimes on the certain highlight packages they pick to focus on which guy. It's just, it's confusing. It's a little perplexing. But I will say this. He was on the ice for two goals. Not a good thing. But I do think this is kind of where Dustin Byfuglien has started to play better. He's been more consistent. He's been more physical. He's been more impactful on the positive side of things. That play that affected Wheels, not a good play. It's not perfect yet, but he's getting closer to the version that we want him to be come playoff time.
And I agree. I'm just saying the perspective of saying that he's
bring it back a notch. Let's fucking reel
tone,
it in.
Yeah, tone it down. When he is having a good game, and I will say I thought even the Arizona game, and actually I think the game against Colorado were two of Dustin Byfuglien's best games, and even the game before this one, he was really good.
Yeah, four game stretch, best hockey he's played all by far.
And so I understand that, but the objectiveness of saying that a guy who's been on the ice for two goals and integral part, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that Byfuglien doesn't take Neil out from the crease before before he gets a stick to the head. To our All-Star goalie.
Yeah, agreed.
So I'm just not glass half full, glass half empty, but let's call it as we see it.
Call a spade a spade.
Yeah. Going to the third period, and the Jets are able to tie this up. There are some really good scoring chances before the Jets get the tying goal in the third period. Wheeler actually put it just wide in the slot on a backhand on a feed from Nick Ehlers. And then a huge save by Connor Hellebuyck kept it a 2-1 game at 3:18. Eakin lifted Laine's stick and broke in on Helly, and Helly made a huge save to keep this a one-goal game. And just when you think the Jets are about ready to pull the goalie, they got a face-off just outside of the Vegas zone, and they're showing the bench, and I could swear if I was reading lips, it was like Maurice talking with Compton about, okay, when should we pull the goalie? The Jets win the draw, and it goes over to Morrissey, and he fires it into the offensive zone. Joel Armia gains control of it on the sidewall, and then stops and holds there because he has time to, and waits for Kyle Connor to get into a spot, and then passes perfectly so that Kyle Connor can make that one-timer, and high glove side on Fleury.
A beauty dish, sick mitts by Connor, too, finding that soft spot and ripping it. That was a nice goal.
So you look at it, Armia and Connor involved in the first goal, and Kyle Connor from Armia is that tying goal. Those guys were the offense that night in the fourth line against this Vegas team. And this is why I hate when people start talking about fourth lines and contributions and all this stuff. The Jets force overtime. They get a point, which takes away the sting of the fact that the Jets probably win this game 2-1 in regulation.
Without the bullshit call.
Yeah.
I'm just, my Coles notes of this game is high tempo. These two teams fly down the ice. There's lots of physicality. The transition game was super important. And both teams act with sticks and stepping up at the blue line and red line. I was saying to my buddy, Dan, I was saying, like, fuck, can you imagine if this was a seven-game series, how good it would be to go to Vegas and check out a game there, how loud that place would be, how loud Winnipeg will be. either Vegas-Winnipeg or Nashville-Winnipeg. Those, to me, those are the series. I mean, as a Jets fan, you're like, shit, both those teams are deep, and they'd be tough matchups. But those would be hell of at least unreal series, and this game was a solid game. It's unfortunate that it was determined by a bad call by a ref, but at least you get one.
There was a high-end scoring chances for the Jets in the overtime.
This fucking Hesh Central is game, to be honest. The score could have been drastically different. Marc-Andre Fleury played a great game, and Helly made some killer saves, too.
Morrissey had a great outlet pass a couple minutes into the overtime, and then Ehlers leaves it for Little after that chance. Little couldn't get it to go. Nate Schmidt had a breakaway, 157. And then Wheeler gets a shot. The puck was loose behind Fleury. Wheeler tries to, like, get it in by, like, basically bowling over Fleury. Vegas had a 2-on-1 the other way right after that chance. And then a minute 3 left, Perron's allowed to walk in to the slot and beat Helly. Clean blocker side. David Perron from James Neal.
Oh, what I noticed on that shift, I'm sure you noticed it too, is Vegas got 2 line changes. So they started off the same one unit. The Jets had their unit. Vegas had their unit. They got puck possession in the Jets' end, and they had a line change, fresh legs. Then they got another line change, fresh legs, and they were done. They were gassed. Buff didn't even move. That I don't even really put on him, but at the same time, him and Wheels were both out on the ice. Remember that? And they were just toast. They had no juice. They couldn't take away that slot shot.
Couldn't
get in the lane.
It was the second time in the overtime where Buff got gassed, just so you know.
And to me, that's honestly, it's more than anything. And I know he's had his moments in OT recently where, you know, he's made some plays. He set up Brian Little recently a couple games back. But to me, he doesn't have that kind of stamina or the speed.
He started the overtime. And what I mean by getting stuck on the ice, and the other guys were able to change, but Buffett got stuck out there. It was 3:15 of the overtime when Buffum was able to get off the ice at the beginning of the overtime. So again, he's out near the end of it. Again, with injuries, there's other guys, you know, playing bigger minutes. So that would affect it too, because Kulikov wasn't available that game. So, you know, but Bufflin's ice time, by the way, 29 minutes, 37 seconds for the game. Myers played over 25. Morrissey played 22. Enstrom was at just over 18. Sherratt 12 and Pullman 10 minutes. So the Jets get a point, so they keep their point streak at home going, but they don't get the win on a game. And really the takeaway from this, and I've been talking about this all year, the league's been talking about it all year, the NHL Players Association asked the league to get some clarification even again this week. What the fuck is goaltender interference?
Yeah, nobody knows, man. Nobody has a clue.
And of course the coaches are going to continue to challenge, because there's a 50-50 chance, regardless of what happens, it might get called back.
All I know is they got less than 30 games to figure it out, because this can't happen in the playoffs, right? We can't have another Brett Hull situation to win the cup.
It's something like that could happen this year.
That's my biggest fear. And yeah, to be on the end of it where your team's the team that, you know, I don't want to be where the Buffalo Sabres were that year.
Yeah.
That's some questionable call, you know, costing me the Stanley Cup. So hopefully they figure it out, and they figure it out quick, man.
Definitely. I don't have any clue anymore what goaltender interference is. And that's, I mean, there's no point even sitting here and having a huge discussion on it. I've seen calls that I think are going to go, and not just in Jets games, just across the board. And in any given game on any given night, when there's a challenge on it, on goaltender interference, you've got as good a luck flipping a coin to figuring out what the actual call, whether it's going to stand as a goal, not stand as a goal. The interference is happening, but there's no consistency on the reviews. That's my problem with it. There is no guidelines that they're following on calling goals.
Sort of backtrack here, just for a point, as I'm looking through my notes here. I don't know if you mentioned, on the 10th goal of the season by Armia, Hendricks picked Fleury's pocket. That's a pretty sweet vet play on that goal, hey? Something to note. And I also, Bayek took forever and a day to figure out. Like, when you're watching the game live, I noticed on the shift that happens. Now, maybe not everybody notices the shift it happens, but we're talking, like, I think it was about 10 minutes later before Bayek figured out that Tanev got rolled up to the checking line. And then in turn, Armia slotted on the line with Connor. I just found that hilarious because it was like literally 10 minutes later before Dennis Bayek had a clue that the switch had been made. And just the difference that, right, again with all the sort of people that devalue what Tanev brings to the table, against a team like Vegas, who's extremely fast, you know, a guy like Tanev, who's currently out of the lineup, you can't teach his kind of speed or his tenacity on the puck, and we miss him. You know, we miss him. There's lots of guys we enjoy watching, but him and Adam Lowry, their effect on the other team's best players, it's noticeable when they are in the lineup. So just wanted to mention it again. I thought it funny that Bayek had no clue.
Yeah, and at a certain point, the first variation of the line that we would have saw last night against Arizona, Armia, Kopp, and Connor were playing together.
Yep, that's where it started.
Yeah.
That's where it happened.
So you see these in-game changes. Yeah, he's usually about 10 minutes behind.
A little bit of tape delay.
Yeah, it is. He's got his lineup, and he's just sticking to it, and then a couple shifts will go by, and then he'll be like, oh, there's a variation. And Maurice has done great variations throughout the year in-game. He does it in-game.
The Wheeler line of confusion continues to happen. It's almost borderline carom counter. Like about every single game. Like if you're listening, pay attention. Every game, see how many times line is called Wheeler and Wheeler is called line.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. It did in the Arizona game.
And every time I just chuckle at myself. Yeah. Makes me laugh.
In the overtime in this game, it was Wheeler, but he was called line. In the Arizona game, a great shot by Wheeler was referred to by Laine's shot. And then Laine's along the sidewall, and then he's like kind of stuttering to realize, like, it's like he caught,
I know exactly
he caught himself. He caught himself. He's like, oh,
Wheeler, shit, passes to Wheeler. What?
Because it came right to Laine.
Participation medal, like, you get one.
I like it.
Yeah, no, I like
it's
it.
So campy.
Also, during this game, Patan, they showed his highlight reel. It was almost like foreshadowing what was about to come because they showed his highlight reel from the Manitoba Moose, and he does this. Did you see that pass where he did a one-touch between the legs pass on the power play out to the slot for a one-timer goal for the Moose? It was fucking sick.
He's creating a highlight reel down there with the Moose. Yeah. The goal that he gets, you know, where he dives forward to tip the puck in. Roof.
Yeah, legit.
Yeah,
goals he's scoring now and some of the nasty passes that he makes are absolutely incredible. It's no wonder that he's whatever he is. I think it's something like 26th on the chart for trade deadline.
Well, there's a lot of teams that want a guy with that skill set. However, whether or not.
I read an article today about the Montreal Canadiens being interested in Nick Batan, or that they thought it, like somebody saying that they thought, you know, that it would be a very good fit because they don't have any scoring. They don't have any draft picks that have offensive upside. And it's just but do you know what they said they would give us? Or what their suggestion was?
Oh, okay.
They said they were going to give Ben for Patan. They thought that, you know, so clearly whoever wrote this article does not watch a lot of Winnipeg Jets game or know about Pullman or Sherratt
and
our depth.
Yeah.
Because they thought that we would need Jordy Ben and would trade Nick Patan straight up. What are your thoughts on that?
That's absurd. It's absurd. Like, you know, like I can say absurd because Kevin Cheveldayoff would just, like, I could just imagine him being in the office and being like, click, like not even responding. If I was a GM and I got a call like that, I would just go, click.
You're like, this is not April, and even if this wasn't April Fool's joke,
yeah,
fuck you.
No, because you know what, Jordy Ben isn't even, it's barely like a like bottom pair, barely 5'6"
on
the Habs.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, now the age on it doesn't coincide. You're talking about a forward for a D-man.
And the guy who wrote the article pointed out that it would be a cap-friendly move because Jordy Ben doesn't cost a lot. So that's the selling point.
That's the selling point on that?
and the Jets need D because of injuries. Again, I don't think they know who Ben Sherratt is. He's been playing the best hockey.
Yeah, and that Tucker Pullman spent a lot of time in the American Hockey League because he can't even get in the lineup for this team. And no disrespect, but Julian Melchiori hasn't actually suited up a game this year for the Winnipeg Jets, and yet he played a number of games last year quite adequately.
Or Cameron Schilling, who was an AHL All-Star this year, has not played one game for the Jets.
Yeah.
Anyways, a little off topic. It's funny, like, you know, text with the Patan thing and just found it comical because there is a ton of shit swirling out right now. And expect that for the rest of the month with the trade deadline coming up.
But. Yeah. And he's on the board. You said he's on the board on the TSN list. So now everybody's just looking at that board and thinking, oh, Patan's going. Who are we getting for Patan? Everybody's just magically going to start making up stuff for it. But you know what? A Patan move, if you're going to do a one-for-one on a defense for a Patan who should, in my humble opinion, will, in a couple of years, have a breakout like Martin St. Louis did. That's why I brought up that comparison back a number of podcasts ago. By the way, I got to run into Nick Patan and told him exactly that just after the holidays. So having said that, the point of it is that, yeah, if you're going to give what is a top six forwards potential at 22 away, then you better be getting a top four D-man. So you want to make a deal to give me Ekman Larson? You want to make a deal on that? Then that's what Nick Patan should be going for. Not some jobber fist six. But that's a lot of teams trying to, and this is the whole thing. Kevin Sheveldayoff does not, if he's going to make a hockey trade, he's going to make a hockey trade. And there's actually been a lot of stories saying that he overvalues his players. But in certain cases, the overvaluation of Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Nick Patan isn't over.
That's all perspective. Yeah. Overvaluing is one perspective. The other is realizing potential, allowing it time to grow.
Yeah.
And not jumping the gun and having a quick trigger and giving up on somebody that you believe in. So there's two sides of the coin to that,
so
that thought.
The overvaluation argument on those three guys is garbage. That's how I want to finish my thought.
Like,
my
if you're
going to
trade
that.
A Nick Patan, this could happen this year. This could be the first time, and it would be sort of outside of anything Chevy's done. He doesn't give away picks, certainly not a first-round pick, but being where the Jets are in the standings, there is a chance. And with the pipeline the Jets have, the cupboards are full, right? We talk about it all the time. We're just talking about it. This could be the year. If you're going to pull the trigger, you could actually trade away that late first-round pick. And then, obviously Nick Patan is an enticing prospect for a lot of teams that are missing scoring punch, that need a guy with a potential for a top-six production, that are hoping for a situation of a Martin St. Louis type of breakout once given the opportunity, which I wouldn't put it past Nick Patan at some point down the road. And even in the not too distant future, whether Chevy's willing to give that up or not, but you got to get a guy back. You got to get a piece. You don't get a rub-a-dub scrub. You're getting most likely a Grabner or a Nash. Nash is another big one going right now.
And that's garbage, by the way, because that's a rental.
Right,
and that's not a hockey deal. That's not a hockey deal. When we were talking
right now, man.
When we were talking about deals, and I said you're making a deal to move out a salaried guy, when I was talking about my Bufflin deal, where you package in the draft pick with a player, roster player, and Marco Dano or somebody like that. That's me saying making a hockey deal and throwing in the first pick to get better players back. In theory, because it's in theory how guys fit into a lineup is
that
you don't know until they get there.
That's why I love, to me right now, my guy that I want to get is Michael Grabner. One, he's got the history and the connection to the Manitoba franchise, Manitoba Moose. He started his career here. It'd be kind of cool to see him come back. Two, he's productive as hell. He's got 21 goals this year. Nash only has 15. He's younger. I just think he's a better fit. You can roll him 1-4, similar to Matty Perreault, and he's got breakneck speed, like Nikolai Ehlers type speed. So he, to me, would be an enticing, if you are going to pull the trigger, that's the kind of guy you got to make a move. And like Matty Perreault said today, he was interviewed, and he said, listen, I've been on teams in the past with Washington, with Anaheim, that were at the top of the conference. Moves were made at the deadline, and it didn't work out well. So that's a player that's been there and experienced that. And that's his sort of chill way of saying, I'm not gonna buy into the hype, and I'm not gonna tell you that you know, our GM has to go and make a move to make us a cup contender. I think they're more than content with where they are right now. If the deal is right, I believe Chevy will make the move. If it's not, he's not going to do it.
And the overvaluation of Rick Nash as a rental is ridiculous. That's ridiculous. What they want for Rick Nash is ridiculous. I would use a comparison that the Jets gave away Drew Stafford to the Bruins for a second round pick. That's about the comparable value that I'd say at best that I would want to be to even get Rick Nash. And I'm sorry. And I know I understand Rick Nash has a pedigree of scoring. I know he's been, national team guy, and I get all the history of Rick Nash. I'm not saying Rick Nash isn't a great player. I'm saying for a month and a half of Rick Nash, and as you said off air, there's rumors that he's going to go back and sign with the Rangers anyways at the end of the year. Who wants that?
That's taking money out of your wallet and throwing it out the window.
And giving, and if we got to give
and
away,
hoping and it, praying that this is that you're the Jets aren't in a position. Somebody, I was listening to, I don't know if it's 12:90 or where I was listening to it, but they were talking about like Nashville. They're primed right now. They've made big moves back to back years. To them, this is the be all and end all. They're going for the cup. I'm not saying the Jets aren't going for the cup, but we're talking about a pretty big window of the Jets have a chance to. I'll drop the D on people. But, like, to build a dynasty, and you don't build a dynasty by shipping away assets for rental players, and I don't think that's in Chevy's playbook whatsoever.
I'm all right now with moving picks, and like even the first rounder next year, knowing it's a late pick, knowing what's in the cupboards. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be particularly happy with a rental guy if that means Sammy Niku, Mason Appleton, Nick Batan, or any other guy.
Rozovic. Everybody and their dog is calling about Jack Rozovic. He's already looking great on the top line. He was looking unreal. He is a top six player. He's more than ready. He's got 3 goals in 5 games. He's going to be a big piece of the puzzle for the Winnipeg Jets. And if Jack Rozovic got traded for Rick Nash, I would not be a happy fucking guy.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be either. I just... When I look at those are top six guys that have careers ahead of them. And I just don't see that being, like I said, there's an overvaluation. And not surprisingly, there has not been a lot of deals done this year because I think the sellers have some ridiculous overvaluation. And they're in tough. Those teams like the Rangers and the Canadiens have sold away all their assets year after year after year trying to go for it. With not even cup contending teams, middle of the pack teams, and that's how they got themselves into this mess.
Well, McKenzie made a good point, and he said he believes that the asking price closer to the deadline should drop. Right now, they're swinging for the fences and hoping somebody's stupid enough to make that deal, which I highly doubt.
Like I said, and I said a podcast or two ago, Chevy makes a deal, it's a hockey deal, and... It will be a blockbuster, but at this point, I think the Trouba injury changed that direction. And now...
In addition, the Mason injury, because Hutch is the other guy from the Winnipeg Jets on that top, trade market, coming up right now. People want Hutch, but you can't give away Hutch when you don't know when Mason's coming back. He's had 2 concussions this year. You got to have him as a backup clause, not to whatever, put a fucking pun on it, him being a backup, but like just in case Mason can't play, you need to have Hutch ready to go in the playoffs to back up Helly in case, knock wood, that something terrible were to happen to Helly. So I think the combination of the injury to Mason and like you just said, Trouba, I think that kind of might have ixnayed whatever trades were going to happen, but who knows, weeks away from the deadline, so we'll see.
And that the replacements coming up have kept the Jets rolling. And when everybody's healthy, they're going to be having to play in the American Hockey League. That's the reality. But that doesn't mean we're bringing in or getting something of value to let those guys go when that's the future of the franchise a couple years out. As soon as that, like when you talk dynasty, if you can have all those guys playing in the lineup, that lineup is 1 through 4 on the lines, basically going to have 12 forwards that are top six forwards, but 6 of them won't be playing top six. Reality. That's reality.
Yeah, you have to be focused on the present with an eye on the future.
Yeah.
But you can't give up too much right now,
yeah,
or down the road. It's a fine balancing act, man.
The Jets welcomed in Colorado, who had snuck their way into two overtime wins over the Jets. It kind of still burns me, even on that second one, again, because controversial call aided the Avalanche getting their second of 2-3-2 wins. So Colorado came into Winnipeg 7-2-1 in the last 10. They had won one. They had a 4-3 overtime win versus Edmonton on the Thursday night going into playing the Jets.
And why is that, Tim?
28-18-4.
Because everybody beats Edmonton.
Nathan MacKinnon, as we mentioned in the last podcast, was injured and out of the lineup. Adam Lowry went down. Of course, Scheifele was still out. Trouba was still out. Dmitry Kulikov did return, and Marco Dano made his way back into the lineup. I was going to make a pun during the Arizona game because Marco Dano's dad came to Winnipeg to watch the game, and I think he's been listening to the podcast, was worried that Dano had gone missing and wanted to make sure. So he actually came to Winnipeg just to make sure his son's all right, so he didn't have to file a missing person report. Throw it in here in the Colorado game.
Maybe talk to him on his birthday.
Yeah. Semyon Varlamov, who I have the trouble always saying his name, did get the start. By the way, this was his first game played since January 2nd, which is when he went out of the game in the Winnipeg game. 13-9-2, 2.87, 9-12, one shutout. He's had an off year, and of course he had a bit of injury trouble too. Helly came in 24-6-8, 236, 924 with four shutouts. That number, every time I read the stats for the shutouts, is going to go up. And it wasn't until, I think, I want to say the 15-minute mark of the third period before I even thought about Helly having another shutout in the game against Colorado.
I thought in the Avalanche game in against Colorado, I thought he was just locked down, though. I mean,
but were you thinking about shutout? Like, how early were you thinking about shutout? Because I was just watching the game and enjoying the game, and then, yeah.
Pretty early on, actually. Oh, okay. I kind of did feel it coming. You know, there was a few opportunities. They hit a couple bars, but at no point did I feel, I don't know. There's no anxiety about I never thought the Avalanche were coming back. It was just kind of a comfortable game. I thought the Jets looked really good, and I thought he looked very calm in the net. The puck was just going into his jersey, soaking it up like a sponge, man. He looked great.
The Jets ended up winning 3-0. Their first goal was a power play goal. Rozel had worked it on into the zone on the power play, and then it got up to Bufflin, who then got it to Wheeler, and Wheeler did the cross ice to Laine in his office
for his 24th. Primary assist, one T cannon.
You see that Wheeler and Bufflin get assists on the Laine goal. That's usually how it goes. You never see this Patrick Laine from Bufflin and Wheeler. I don't know why that is. It's just a fact. I'm just going to say that Wheeler getting it over to Laine is the key on that.
Well, that was sort of the thing we said last podcast, and if anybody could find this for us, this would be great. I would love to know, like,
when it comes to
Dustin Bufflin's assist, I'd like to know his primary assist versus his secondary assist. I think he has the majority of his assists are secondary assists.
I'm not even going to sit down and do that. I'm not going
to
do it.
I'm just putting that out there. If anybody could find that, that's just something I'm curious
about. Well, you can do it. You just have to bring up the game logs for all the games this year.
Yeah, I'm not fucking doing it either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm telling you right now, I won't even go through the process of doing that. There's something there. But if somebody wants to argue that he has way more primary than secondary assists, if they want to go through and do the process to prove us wrong, they're welcome to. I think you're accurate on that. I think the secondary assists outweigh the primary assists, which is why I'm just absolutely not going to go through and take the time to do it. 14:54, Colorado had a high-end scoring chance when Ratanen got a takeaway from a Wheeler pass, and he rang it off the post. And then Barry actually had a chance as well, and he gets a pass to Wilson, who contacted Helly, but the puck stays out. And I guess if it had gone in, it should have been goaltender interference, but who knows whether we would have got that call if the puck goes into that. So a couple chances for Colorado. This game had a lot of speed to it, too, as well.
There was a scary moment in the game when Rozel got hammered against the glass in the stanchion. That happened in the first period as well. I was worried there for a second because that didn't look good.
And Hendricks did go out in the first period, and he was out for the game. And then, of course, he's been on the injured reserve. So those things kind of happened to the Jets on that. Another forward going down, centerman going down on top of that. In the second period, there were a couple of high-end scoring chances just to talk about. Varlamov stopped Ehlers going in alone for a five-hole, and it got through, but then went off the post, just the way he moved his legs. Wheeler got in close at the middle mark of the second period, and that rang the post and crossbar and went out. So a little post luck for Varlamov. And Colorado had a 2-on-0 shorthanded at the 7-minute mark after taking a too-many men penalty, and Bork fired it wide of the net, like wide. He pulled a Dustin Byfuglien on that one. This is not even close. That was a big chance for Colorado to even up the score. In the third period, the Jets get a pair of goals, and it's just worked by that first line that once Scheifele comes back, won't be the first line. Jack Roslovic has it go off his back and into the net as it redirects up and over after Wheeler took a shot in the high slot. Wheeler gets the assist along with Ben Chiarot. Jack Roslovic gets his second of the year.
So maybe that's a good spot to talk about Ben Chiarot's game just for a second.
Yeah, sure.
There? Just Ben Chiarot, this game to me, it was noticeable. I wrote his name down more in this game, I think, than I've written down all year. His jump in his legs is his offensive game, stepping up. There was a, in the second period, Kopp won a drawback to him, and he rushed, did a little cutback move and a shot on net that just like nicked the goal, Varlamov's glove, and almost went in the net. And throughout the game, I just felt like his physical play was noticeable. He's been a physical force since being reinserted in the lineup, and just his reads on when to pinch and when not to pinch. I feel like Chiarot's been a force there, which is why I was laughing so hard about the whole Montreal deal. I think Chiarot's more than a serviceable defenseman. You know, if I could draw it up on the chalkboard, I feel like I would have him in the lineup every day, to be honest. You know, I would take Tobias out of the lineup, and I would have Chiarot as an everyday player. So this game against the Avalanche, Chiarot, to me, I actually don't know. I didn't check the three stars, but fuck, he could have been one of them. He had a great game.
You know, I don't ever mark down the three stars. I made a joke about that.
Yeah, you love that about as much as you love the All-Star game.
Yeah. Well, it's a game that Trouba had, you know, more points than Byfuglien. Played more ice time and was like a force, and Byfuglien ends up being in the three stars, and Trouba's not even listed on there.
I got big letters here. Too many men penalty for Colorado that happened this game. Have you noticed this year it seems like that's happened more than any other year? Or maybe I just wasn't paying as close attention in years past, but it feels like that's something that's happening more and more. Maybe they're calling it closer?
I think they are calling it closer. I think they've really got
a little less leeway.
Key on it, because especially in that one, the puck was right over by the Colorado bench. So I think teams have clued in that they'll get that call. So if they realize that teams are making changes, I think
that's what I'm saying. I think it's become a strategy that they talk about.
Other teams now, when a team's making a change, if you can get the puck over by their bench while they're in the midst of making a change, 9 out of 10 times you're getting that too many men call with it being over there. Because as soon as somebody plays it, they're like, oh, blowing down. So I think teams strategically now are putting it by the bench when they've got the chance, and that's the reason why you're seeing it a bit more. Because strategically with the game, I think that's what, and that this one against Colorado is that exact thing. Puck ends up over by Colorado's bench while they're trying to make the line change, and the Jets get the call.
Yep.
Worth noting. I did talk about that because I said that's when Colorado had their 2-on-0 on the shorthanded.
Oh man, that was an ugly situation. Helly made a crack after the game. About just being in perfect position and intimidating the Colorado players. That was pretty good.
Anyways, yeah, I believe it. I said, it was like Bork did a total like Byfuglien. Like it was like so far off
the Helly's head. Become a pretty good quote, man. I like him. I recently he was asked about it, about the last game, because he didn't have probably his worst game in some ways, last game against Phoenix. It's hard to get up for the last place team that's pretty terrible. But the guy asked him just kind of like, implied that, basically said, like, you know, kind of let in a couple goals you'd like to have back. And he's like, well, this year I've let in, I don't know, what, somewhere around like 70 goals, and I'd like to have all 70 back. Yeah. Don't like letting any goals in the net. You know? Just like right on. Funny, stupid question, you get a funny answer.
You know, he's got dry humor too.
Yeah.
Nick Ehlers got his 20th of the year into an empty net. And, of course, Helly picked up his fifth shutout of the season. So, good on Nick Ehlers. He's been struggling to get pucks in the net lately. It was nice to see him get the empty netter.
Hopefully it has the same impact that it had with Brian Little. Remember, Brian Little got he got an empty netter and he got a shootout goal when he was struggling. He went through a stretch where he couldn't buy a goal. Nikolaj Ehlers, it's not like he hasn't been flying around the ice, you know, creating hash after hash after hash.
The second line,
just a little snake bit,
was good, but lately, yeah, Perreault, and other than Little, because Little was snake bitten, and then he was seeming to be the one that wasn't snake bitten. You know, at any given time, I think that line's going to, like, bust out for a lot. I actually was thinking it was going to happen in the Arizona game. They still played a good game. They just didn't get the goal. So we finally do get to Arizona. And what Warren's been alluding to, and we've been alluding to with the Arizona Nordiques, is that 12-31-9. They had lost three coming in, including on Saturday a 6-0 loss to L.A., 2-4-4 in their last 10. They are last in the league, and they're last in the league because they give up the most goals per game. They score the least amount of goals per game. Their penalty kill is sitting around 20th in the league, 24th on the power play. If you looked at the Jets numbers in those categories, Jets are 6th in goals allowed, 5th in goals for. Their PK is now 8th going into this game, and the power play is 2nd in the league. And the power play actually hasn't been as good as it was. Also, Arizona has an atrocious road record, 6-15-6 outside of Arizona. Well, I guess that's comparable to
their home record. The numbers of the Coyotes are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have any good stats. Everything you can imagine is
bad. But you still got to play the game, and these guys show up. So their coach, Rick Tocchet, who, of course, was an assistant with Pittsburgh and then came back to Arizona, but he actually did play for both franchises, too.
I was a big Rick Tocchet fan growing up, actually.
So he played in Pittsburgh, and he also played a few years in Arizona. So he decided to take on the head coaching job, and he basically called out his players for their effort, really. Well, I mean, they lost 6-0 to L.A. I'm sure if I had watched that game, they probably did not compete. And I think what he meant by their performance was that they had to compete more. So even though the Jets had won the previous two games 4-1 against Arizona, still got to play the game, and Arizona was going to come in and battle and muck it up. And this was, like you said, it's a trap game. You expect to win the game if you're the Winnipeg Jets. But you got a team in here that basically is going to try and, you know, keep it close.
What really surprised me before this game is I didn't understand why Hutch didn't go in net. I thought this is a perfect time to put him in the net because they're coming into a stretch where they're playing some very high-end teams coming up. And I think he has a little bit more motivation than Helly in this game. Not like Helly doesn't have motivation to win, but, you know, with Hutch, he's got more to prove. I think it might have been partly due to the fact that 7 players were out of the lineup. But I thought this was going to be a spot where we would have saw Hutch. You know, would have been a good opportunity anyways. And you know what? This game could have easily gone. They were all over them from the beginning. They scored a quick one real early in the game. And then I felt like right away, it felt like it could be like a 10-0 game. And a lot of guys are getting goals and apples and points. And life was going to feel really good. I thought
they were going to put 10 up.
The scary thing is this team did just get beat badly 6-0. Their coach did just call them out. And the one thing Maurice said prior to the game is, we got to stay out of the penalty box. And the Jets had a little bit of trouble with that this game. And it swung momentum. And 5-on-5, you know, this team, the Coyotes are not, even with the injuries, just don't have the same talent. They don't have the veteran experience. They're just not going to be able to beat the Jets. The Jets, I feel like, lit the fire under them by taking ill-advised penalties. I just think that they gave them hope. The worst thing you can do for a team, because Phoenix actually, I did it again. Arizona, the Yotes, whatever, they have a lot of high-end players, but they don't have the balance of strong veteran leadership and guys that can produce that are veterans, and they don't have a stability in net. Ranta just isn't a starting goalie. And the thing is, when young guys with high skill are allowed to gain confidence on the power play, it affects their 5-on-5 play. It makes them a better team. It makes them dangerous. I think once this game got going and once they had some things go their way, they believed they could beat this Jets team. And that's the problem, because if you step on their throat and you get 2 or 3 quick, this game can turn into a 6-7, 8-0 blowout. And it unfortunately didn't go in that direction.
I think Antti Raanta is a starting goaltender, by the way.
Yeah.
I think he's just stuck in Arizona now. And like I said, I don't think Mike Smith got enough credit for how often he had to stand on his head. But his numbers weren't good in Arizona because he's playing in Arizona. They had two of their top defense, Chychrun and the other one, were a couple of them were out. Can't even remember the other guy's name now. But we're out for extended periods. They don't have depth on defense. They don't have offense. They don't really have a lineup.
You got Clayton Keller.
They're special teams. And Clayton Keller. Okay, so he was great for the first 20 games. And then his drop-off has been substantial. Max Domi, they put up a stat last night where he has 22 points this year, having played all games. His rookie season, he had 52.
But that's exactly what I was just talking about.
Anthony Duclair is gone, and they've got Panic instead.
Well, there you go. That's kind of the thing, though. They don't have guys around them. Too much is being put on those young kids' shoulders. If you're able, like the Jets normally are able to throw Adam Lowry, who's big and intimidating, and that line of Kopp, Tanev, and Lowry, if that line had been together, this game goes in a different direction. And then the thing is, Clayton Keller's having to go up against the other team's checking line. We were just talking about it earlier in the podcast, the luxury of maybe, possibly, the next game, having Nick Batan playing with Arozovic and Connor, having the opportunity to get away from other teams' checking line and playing against the third or fourth line. Almost did it. Arizona doesn't have that luxury, so their really young players are having to play against the other team's best. They don't have any insulation. They have zero depth, so that's a part of it, I think. But they do have some skill.
The other guy that came over with Raanta from the Rangers was Derek Stepan, and he got his 10th goal in this game. So
that's Joel Armia numbers.
Yeah, yeah. And he's supposed to be a veteran or more veteran guy.
He's top six for them.
Yeah. He finally got the double digits in goals. But that franchise has problems. And yet, no matter who it seems, how good players are.
Man, they have more holes than the fucking Titanic. That ship is sinking, man.
Well, it sank. It does it. It's like even the boat. What do they call it? The rescue boat on the side of the boat. When it's sinking, that has holes in it too. That's the way I view the Arizona Coyotes. It's like, yeah, the Titanic has already sank, but the boat they need to get to land also has holes in it.
And the shitty thing is, for some of those young players, I think it starts to create bad habits that'll take a while to break, even if they are traded to another team. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that franchise is doing and where they're going, but...
So it took the Jets 19:30 of the first period, Rozovic. So the first shot on goal by the Jets went into the net. Jack Rozovic's third goal in the last five games played. And he's the guy that gets the puck and gains control of the zone. It's moved to Buff to Tobias. Tobias actually brings himself into more of a slot presence and then does a slap pass over to Rozovic.
Pulls a Daniel and Henrik Sedin. That was a beauty slap pass.
Yeah.
Unbelievable snipe. Get used to seeing that.
Top shelf.
That's Rozovic.
Top shelf.
That's what he does.
So, beautiful goal. Jets get up. Arizona gets a point shot through traffic. So, Konantin gets his third. To tie up the game. Dustin Byfuglien then got his third in his 800th game as a National Hockey Leaguer, and he was in front. He actually did a pinch, and then Perreault gets it to Little. That rebound is what Buff bats into the net, and I mean bats. Like, I mean...
Joey Bats.
You know what? Yeah, I was going to say the Toronto Blue Jays should invite him to spring training because maybe he can go play for the Blue Jays.
He was funny in his interview about it. He kind of just joked, you know, you swing and you miss way more than you make contact this time. This time I got lucky and I made contact. That's what happens, you know. Oh, of note, this is a 800th game.
Yeah. So there's a high-end scoring chance on a sauce pass from Nick Patan to Dano, who put it off the post. Ben Chiarot makes a gorgeous pinch to keep the play alive. Josh Archibald, and by the way, I had to take the number off the sweater of Josh Archibald, go on to the roster of the Phoenix Coyotes and see...
Arizona.
Arizona, yes. You know I'm doing it.
Yep.
go on to the Arizona Coyotes lineup. Find out who wears number 48, which is Josh Archibald. This is the most that Josh Archibald is going to get talked about ever, by the way.
I didn't know who the fuck Josh Archibald is. I feel like I know his player in the NHL. So
He's a player for the Arizona Coyotes, and he lost his stick on this play, which is why I mentioned it, and that's why I looked up to see. So, in a way, Arizona was shorthanded because of the player losing his stick.
The pass to Dana was pretty sick, though, too. Hey, I remember. Yeah. Like, holy shit, that was a dirty sauce pass.
Yeah. It was a dirty sauce pass. And it went off the post.
Yep.
Patan's first goal of the year doesn't happen if Dano finishes that. And it was that close. Because then the puck's already in the net, 5:33. At 5:32, after the great pinch by Sherratt, and they're able to work it back to the point. So Sherratt makes a pinch. Dano covers at the point. Cooley and Dano then do a swap. And then Sherratt gets back to the point. He then moves it to the center.
Pulls a little Myers move. That's a classic Myers move. That little kind of like, and Morrissey does it a lot too. That little like toe drag move. Truba too, actually. Yeah. All three of those guys do it quite a bit. Yeah. Learning from those guys.
Yeah.
Pulls it across to the middle of the ice. Makes sure, doesn't try to fucking, you know, hammer it through the boards. Just put it on net and contaminate a dirty tip.
They were saying that Ben Sherratt actually has consistently at the Jets skills competition had the hardest shot, even harder than Buffalo.
He had a 105-mile-an-hour shot a couple of years ago. He won the whole thing. Yep.
Yeah. So he's got a great shot.
Patan, so it's not that he can't hammer it, but get the shot through. That's the most important thing.
And Patan was there to tip it in. So Nick Patan gets his first. Sherratt gets the primary assist. And Marco Dano did get an assist on that as well, which I'm happy for him on that because
Pops is in the stands.
Yeah, and I already made the joke about Pops is making sure that he's still in Winnipeg and alive. So good on Marco Dano. Too bad he didn't score with his dad in the building. Having said that, Nick Patan definitely, that's a redemption thing for him. We spent a lot of time talking about Nick Patan. Don't want to continue on that. Dvorak tied it up for Arizona on a power play. Lemieux in the neutral zone took a penalty on a cross check. And we talked about the PK injuries that the Jets have earlier in the podcast. This is an example of it. Arizona gets their goal. And again, a shot where the second effort by Dvorak after an Ekman-Larsson shot and Stefan get in there. And he kind of fans on the second shot. Oh, I know how that actually. Ekman-Larsson starts in 180, like away from the Jets net in his own end. He makes that outlet pass to Stefan, who then makes it to Dvorak. Dvorak fanned on it. The second effort is what goes in. The
first two goals against Helly. Those are two.
Five-hole.
Two of the worst goals that he's allowed all year.
Yeah.
But actually, just a real quick second, just before that, to touch on Brendan Lemieux, where he's kind of rolled his eyes. You can see he was not happy about that penalty. That being said, that's who Brendan Lemieux is. He was trying to run around, trying to cause some shit. But at the same time, prior to that penalty they took, which was ill-advised, okay, and I'm a big Lemieux fan, you could tell he's trying to start a fight, actually, and he's running around trying to hit people, and nobody would go with him. Ends up taking a penalty instead. But prior to that, Max Domi had taken a shot on a guy, and that fucking piece of shit Ronaldo was doing the same thing, running around, cross-checking guys from behind. So I think that was part of it, too. Lemieux was trying to stick up for his teammates. Not the right time. Did not work out for the Jets.
3-2 for the Jets after the first period of play. Special teams. The Jets were 0-2 on the power play. They finished the game 0-4. Now, Arizona was 1-1 on the power play in the first period. So, it's the Jets were winning this game in spite of the fact that on the special teams, they were actually losing. They end up actually killing off a couple other penalties in this game. Won't go into big detail about it. As we said, Nick Patan took one late in the third that a lot of people were like, oh, you know, he had a great game, but then that penalty. And he had a pair of them as well. But those guys were trying to make an impact, and they did make an impact both positively. And you know what? Like you said, even Blake Wheeler takes a penalty on one of those suspect icings, because there was a whole bunch of them where the Jets beat the icing.
What was going on? What was going on this game? The fans were losing their mind. I'm at home going, I don't know how they keep fucking this up. I don't think I've ever seen that many bad calls by linesmen. We're usually focused on the refs missing a call. But I couldn't believe how many times. I didn't count them, but I'd say it would be a pretty good estimate, about 10 calls they missed last night on icing. And it affected.
She did bring one back to center ice.
Oh, yeah.
And Patan actually physically had to touch the puck first.
Nice. But shit was baffling.
Yeah, it was baffling. Kyle Connor does a toe drag in the neutral zone at the start of the second period around 17:44 minute mark, just before that. He creates space, and then his speed backs up Arizona. And then he does a wonderful sauce pass to a pinching Dmitry Kulikov, who puts it pretty much where Rozel put it, top shelf, glove side. Dmitry Kulikov gets his third. Jets are up a pair now, 4-2. Kyle Connor and Andrew Kopp with the assists on that one. Just a good point of the game. So the Jets got that two-goal lead up. That was the only goal of the second period. There were some other chances in that period. Helway made a couple of great saves, one on Chychrun, and he also had Ronaldo strip the puck of him behind the net on a power play, but Laine was able to get back and gain control of the puck. So a couple chances for Phoenix. Rozel had a break that Ekman-Larsson basically hooked him on and did take a penalty for that. You know what? I don't even think
To me, that's a good spot, because I did want to bring this up. I thought it hasn't been a long time since the All-Star competition, and everybody's money was on Connor McDavid. He's the fastest player in the NHL. And Connor McDavid's the reason I'm bringing this up is, you just said Rozel's speed. Ekman-Larsson's a good skater, and he had to hook him. Otherwise, Rozel's gone on a breakaway, and he's got an amazing finish. Anyways, Rozel a couple of years back was in a fastest skater competition in the AHL. McDavid's time this year was 13.454. Rozel 2 years back, 13.674. So when we're talking breakneck speed, we're talking McDavid-esque speed.
And still has a finish. I just pointed out, the reason I pointed out is that I think Rozel does have the finish, that if the hook isn't there, he does score. Secondly, I point out that is Arizona's best defenseman, Ekman-Larsson, that has to take the penalty on Jack Roslovic. And actually, there's a couple other points in this game where we talked about Lemieux and Patan taking penalties. They also, if I remember correctly, a couple of the penalties that Arizona took were drawn by those Jets, by Lemieux and by Patan. So there's some balancing out on that.
So in some ways, it evens out in the wash.
Yeah. I already did mention that Stepan got his 10th earlier. That was a late goal, but early in the third period, that made it a 4-3 game. Then it pretty much was very much to the outside. Lots of jump and chase. Not a lot of high-end
scoring chances. To the chagrin of Maurice, you don't hear this from coaches very often. Often they say, dump it in, pound them on the forecheck. But the kind of team the Jets have, they have such high-end skill. He actually said, I would like to see my guys make a few more plays. They were almost being too simple, keeping things too simple against a team that they could have exposed a little bit more with time of possession in their own end and using their skill to their advantage. I think it's one of those games they just have trouble getting up for. It happens time and time again in every sport, on every level of sport. When you're one of the top teams in the league, it's a struggle to get up for those games that don't seem to have the same impact. I mean, 2 points is 2 points, but this is a game. I tell you one thing, the game coming up against the St. Louis Blues, that intensity is going to be way higher. I don't want to say effort level, but everything about that game is going to be on another level. So the Coyotes game, not a great one. Jets still got the W, but
and that's what
good
matters.
Stretch of games coming up. Yeah. But we're going to see some good hockey.
There are some good teams coming up in the next little stretch of this homestand. It does start with Friday night, St. Louis being in Winnipeg.
The return of Mark Scheifele, hopefully.
And yeah, all things being, if the rest of the week goes as planned, Mark Scheifele is expected to be back. The New York Rangers will then visit the Winnipeg Jets. The Washington Capitals follow them, and Washington's been tearing it up again. And then the relief doesn't really happen because Colorado comes back into town for the fourth meeting with the Jets. As I mentioned, I remember a podcast ago where I said we're going to have Colorado twice plus St. Louis as far as the divisional games in this homestand. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of...
And even though they're McKinnon-less, they're a dangerous team right now. They're on the outside looking in right now, I believe, in the playoff picture just because they're in the Central Division. If they were in the Pacific, they'd be in third place in the Pacific right now.
Yeah. St. Louis, 32-20-3, who is third in the Central, by the way. And they will be coming in 14-9-3 on the road, 7-5-1 in the division St. Louis is this year. The Jets now 8-5-2 in the division, and St. Louis did lose their last game. 6-2 last night to Minnesota, because that's how tough the Central is. 6-4 in the last 10. They're a good team. Make no mistake about it, they're a good team.
Gene Schwartz, still out?
Oh, we can take a look and see.
And that's an interesting thing. I mean, 6-4 isn't bad.
He's not listed, at least on this site, that he's out.
That'd be a huge piece for them.
Sanford and Fabry. Fabry's been out pretty much all year. But those are the two that are listed. So Schwartz is listed as healthy.
Huh. Well, that's a big one for them.
And all their defense
are healthy. Because they kind of fell off a cliff when he got injured a bit, despite the fact, obviously, they're still a very talented group of Tarasenko and Shen. They're the good team, Pietrangelo on the back end. But he's a big piece of the puzzle. And unlike the Jets, the Blues have kind of just been, tread in water, waiting for his return. I don't even know. Maybe this is his return. I haven't looked closely when if he returned last game or if this is going to be his return. Regardless, him being in the lineup is going to be a tougher test for the Winnipeg Jets.
There is a positive to take out of this, and the reason I'm going to mention this as quickly is St. Louis actually has to play the night before in Colorado and then come in and play Winnipeg. They've got a back-to-back. So that's a benefit to the Jets if they can continue with their fast starts at home, get up on a really good team, maybe bury them away, unlike they did against Arizona. Just worth noting on it. Definitely a ton of stuff going forward with the Winnipeg Jets as they continue this homestand and hopefully string together.
One more thing I want to talk about.
We're going to end on it. We're going to end on it. The Tribune, right?
Yeah, that's where I was going. Yeah. We didn't even talk about it, but we're going to sync here, buddy.
I'm giving you like 3 minutes to talk about it. I thought it would be a positive thing to end a podcast on. I just went through the list of everything. We got everything in there other than Patrick Laine's Tribune
article. I just thought, I didn't think I could like Patrick Laine more than I like him. I just think he's an incredible player, incredible upside. I'm sure lots of you read the article, so I don't have to get into all. But I thought the comments with Nikolaj Ehlers taking jabs at his buddy is always a good time. Always makes me laugh. His cracks about the Wi-Fi were great, but I just seemed like he's pretty passionate, and that's a good sign for Winnipeg Jets fans when you're thinking about will we be able to keep Patrick Laine here, because he's gonna warrant a big time paycheck. And reading this article, it kind of makes you think that, like, there are more important things to Patrick Laine than being some fancy place. He's a pretty humble kid. He gets driven to the rink and driven home every day from his mom. He jokes about, like, you wouldn't want to have your mom cook your meals for you still. It's pretty rad. When he's not playing games, he's not going out and getting into trouble. He's not doing push-ups with sacks of cash on his back. He's playing PlayStation like a lot of 19-year-olds do with his buddies. I liked his openness, just talking about that, he didn't fully know what to expect about Winnipeg, but he talked about seeing the clip about the watching the Jets fans doing the whiteout, right? And just how that made him feel, and the whole thing is just great. I like that he's self-deprecating about his beard. He talks about how one of his buddies was doing it, so he did it too, and now the guys are cracking on him about looking like he's Amish and shit like that. Like, the guy's got an absolutely great sense of humor, but he seems like he's proud. Like, Winnipeg has become his home away from home. And if you're a Jets fan, this article, it's a must read. Just Google, if you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure lots of your friends have probably posted it. I know I reshared it the second I saw it and got a couple texts. People were saying they just loved it too. But check out the Players Tribune, Patrick Laine. Just absolutely loved it.
It bodes well. It's, you know what, I think the takeaway from that is that when he says the Winnipeg's, they're my people, like I'm part of the Winnipeg culture now, and that does bode well, because that guy is franchise changing player with everything else that the development of this franchise has done, but having him here, that's where you can get to that point of having, as you said, the D word dynasty. So massive. On that note, First Class Podcast, like our Facebook page. I did that now so I can edit out the Freudian slip. Follow us on Twitter at First Class Pod. FirstClassPodcast.wordpress.com is where you can find the podcast. Tim Bigelow, Warren Smith, go Jets go.
Go Jets go.